Welcome to the Talking Security Podcast. We will talk about items related to Microsoft security. Welcome to another episode of the Talking Security Podcast, where we dive deep into the world of security, technology, and innovation. I'm your host, Frans Arundorp, and today we're continuing our exciting DevSecOps series. Joining me are two brilliant minds in the field, Poyan Gabazi and Sander Ten Brinke. Together, we'll explore the critical aspects of monitoring infrastructure within the DevSecOps framework. We'll discuss the tools, strategies, and best practices that can help you ensure robust security and seamless operations in your development and deployment processes. So let's get started. Welcome back, guys. The last recording before summer.
Yeah, we're going to go on a well-deserved holiday.
Almost there.
Almost there.
It has been a while.
It's been a great journey until now, guys. We have done a couple of episodes until now. We covered a lot of the stages of the DevOps and the DevSecOps series. And the last one was, of course, the monitoring phase. And now, as we announced last episode, we will continue in that with going more in deep about, okay, what if your application is now in production? What are we going to do now? So in this episode, we will be talking about infrastructure monitoring. It happens in the cloud, but we still have infrastructure.
Exactly. Yeah, we don't need to worry about, you know, getting our own computers up and running and all that stuff in the server, but we're now using cloud like Azure. And even though your application might be working well in there, how do you know for sure that your infrastructure is safe and secure? How do you know that even though you might have clicked the correct things in the portal, which I hope you're not doing, how do you know that
everything
is... I
hope you are not clicking in a portal, so...
It's click-offs, it's click-offs. It's, you know, how do you know that it's all secure, and when something changes, you want to be notified about that. So how do you set that kind of stuff up?
Yeah, I think in general, going to cloud is definitely for developers, it gives them speed and freedom to do stuff that they really want to do. But it's important for organizations to be able to monitor and be able to see what's happening in the infrastructure. Definitely because it's now outside. You don't have the visibility which you normally had. You have today one application, tomorrow it can be multiple applications. Today you have it maybe without any public internet, and tomorrow it's suddenly with public internet. So monitoring, where it was maybe traditional-wise getting deprecated, getting more important because of the visibility, right?
Yeah. I think, Poyan, there's a funny thing. One of the recordings that we done in the MVP Insights episodes, we're talking about knowledge from newcomers. Talking about infrastructure, where we have 20 years experience in the field, knowing all the local on-premise stuff that was there in the past, an on-prem SQL server and another database, a file server, whatever. Everything that can be used within an application is still infrastructure. Nowadays, we're hosting that in the cloud, but it's still infrastructure as we used to it, like the on-prem days. And I think it's important to discuss these kind of things.
Yeah. So to kind of maybe kick it off, one thing that that Poyan kind of said before we started the podcast was the difference kind of between like monitoring and protection and how you deal with all that kind of stuff. So maybe you can kind of talk a little bit more about that, Poyan.
Yeah, definitely. I think what's important is from one side having your monitoring in place, because when we are talking about monitoring is we are thinking of our environment, like platform side, right? It can be Azure, it can be all the cloud providers, and what's happening on there, like what kind of resources we are deploying, how are our resources performing, and can we when we bring it to security wise, can we find, based on those monitoring rules, also behavior that normally shouldn't be there, for example? simple stuff like a user has never deployed certain resources in Azure or in
that's interesting.
And that's suddenly they are deploying all kind of resources or doing suddenly there's an increase that from a user that's changing all kind of resource properties in an unusual time. It doesn't need to be a vulnerability or a hack, but it is an unusual behavior.
Yeah.
And when we are talking about protection, it's more trying to keep the bad guys out there. So we are, you have like from Microsoft, you have the whole Defender for Cloud Stack. We have Defender for SQL, where we are really trying to stop, for example, a SQL injection. Or with Defender for API, we are trying to stop all kind of attack simulations or vulnerabilities within our application for being used by the hackers. So I think that's and protection normally stops there. And when we are talking about monitoring, it's getting and then doing an analysis. And based on that, doing a reaction or a response to see what's going on there.
Okay. I find it really cool that you talked about, like, when I think about infrastructure monitoring, I'm definitely thinking about, like, someone, I don't know, opening port 22 to the internet or whatever. But the thing you said about making unusual changes and stuff like that, I find that really interesting because it's something I've never actually thought about. Can you talk a little bit more about how you can detect those kind of things?
Yeah, definitely. So what we normally do with customers is, for example, assuming they are fully on Azure to keep simplify the scenario, but this is definitely for multi-cloud possible as well. Every activity you do on Azure is logged in your Azure Activity environment, in your logging table, right? So you start a VM, you shut it down, you create a resource, you delete it, you update it. It's all kept by who did what when.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is normally we use that data. We ingest it in platforms like Sentinel, which is a SIEM solution. And based on those data, we do all kind of correlations. So we create scheduled rules where we are searching for that behavior. So it can be... For one customer, it can be indeed changing certain stuff. But other customers say, well, I have certain users which I want to monitor that are, if they do any something specific. So you have like in general stuff that you can monitor, also regarding keyfold or other resources. But you can also do it like customer-wise. So it's a combination of having that data and having that products like Microsoft Sentinel for doing the correlation on that data.
So I know that like as a developer, I've also set up application monitoring recently, which has been quite fun to do. And I know that they like things like Application Insights, they have kind of standard metrics that you can also create alerts on. Is there any standard metric for unusual activity as well? Because, like, you know, creating alerts based on unusual activities is kind of vague and is probably like a scenario-based thing. Does Azure offer anything out of the box for this? Like, you can say if there's an unusual amount of changes, Azure might know what you mean. Is there anything built into Azure for that?
So in Microsoft Sentinel, we have multiple solutions available for us, which we can onboard in the form of a log source. Mm-hmm. Azure Activity is one of those solution packs which we can enable from the Sentinel Store Pack, which is also available on the old naming convention, Azure Sentinel GitHub repository, which we will definitely put in the description here. You will see that there are all kinds of solutions there based on products, right. Or and Azure is a product in that as well. And there are definitely certain detections and anomaly and configurations out of the box available.
Oh, that's really nice.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. Things like a user never have done certain changes and suddenly is doing something on Azure. That's a common one, which you can find there definitely. But from other hand, we have also like, if for example, you are using Azure Key Vault, right? So we have on Azure, we have the cloud platform level where you can do all kind of detections, but we also have like solution wise. So Azure SQL, Azure Key Vault, Azure Web Apps. And there we are also talking about diagnostics logging.
Right.
It's the layer between platform and application logging, actually. So if we talk about Azure SQL, then, for example, a user or an admin dropped a table, right? Mm-hmm. That is a scenario that you can build a use case detection around it when you are having that diagnostic logging from an Azure SQL, for example.
Right. So to summarize, what you're saying is when, for example, a user performs an activity in the database itself, that is something that would also get logged to Azure Monitor, to some log analytics workspace.
Yeah.
And basically, I can not only create alerts based on things that are happening in Azure, like a resource that created, but also based on the events within a resource, like a table being dropped from an entity.
So that's the difference between when we are talking is actually three layers. I think we mentioned that in last episode as well, that we have Azure activity logging, which contains the platform logging, and we have Azure diagnostic logging, which contains what happens in the resource itself.
Yeah.
And then we have on top of that, we have the application logging, definitely, which is normally through application insights and other tools.
Okay. So I find this is I think this is really great. One thing that we already kind of discussed beforehand as well is like, how do you then manage all of these rules, and how do you make sure that when you create resources, that this is done securely and maybe with infrastructure as code and rolled out and deployed? And I think Franz shared something really interesting about that, so maybe you can kind of talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, one thing before.
Sure.
What we talked about was networking. Networking in relation of the application that you're deploying. I have some thoughts on that. When we have networking in a firewalling, normally in an infrastructure, we do a hub-spoke model in most cases, I think, to deploy an infra. But are you deploying an application as part of an infra, or are you deploying an application standalone to serve some customers that are probably outside? So are you deploying a SaaS application that is hosted on your Azure platform? Is it needed that it's connected to your own infra, for example? Because you can have an application with a backend in one subscription or in multiple subscription to deviate the different resources. What kind of network do we use? What is, from an infra perspective, related to an application, what is the most thing that you're doing, Sander?
So, nowadays, just to check if I understand you correctly. So what kind of applications, or how do I deploy my applications nowadays? Like most of the time, is that what you mean?
Is it a standalone application that is used outside the company, or is it an internal application that's connected to your not on-prem, but your own infra that is probably in your Azure environment as well?
Yeah, so most of the times, like we're deploying applications that are, you know, within the existing infraclation. So you have like, I don't know, a product service and an order service and a stock service. That's kind of the stuff you mean. Mm-hmm. And then with an outside thing, so let's say that, I don't know, you're deploying this kind of stuff, but then you might also deploy like a partner service, and that's kind of outside of your infra, because that is meant to be consumed by other companies.
Yeah, and that makes a real difference for management of your infra. Because if it's the first scenario, if you are building an application that is specific for that organization that needs to interact with an order system or whatever, connected internally, then it needs to be connected to the internal network. That can be an Azure network, an hub-spoke model, for example. Then it needs to be controlled by a firewall. You need to open some ports, some services that it can be connected. Yeah, and the normal way that we are organized that is infra as code. And the thing that you want to answer me is infra as code If we do that and we have a firewall up and running, and when the Azure firewall, for example, then everything is blocked on forehand, and then we can open a specific port or a specific service or whatever.
Yeah.
I have in the past I worked at a in an environment where we did that in the following way. We had a DevOps pipeline that controlled the complete infra where the Azure firewall was running, and then right. based on a request within DevOps, a team can make an adjustment to request a port that needs to be open on that firewall. And then it needs to be approved. After it's approved, the DevOps pipeline was running later on that day or in the evening or in the night, whatever it's needed for that customer, right. and it's running. And then the next day or the next hour, that specific port was open, but there was a real approval flow was in it to open yeah. a specific thing built on infra's code. And you can do some monitoring on that based on the things that the team was implementing in the DevOps pipeline when it's running, but also after that with using Defender for Cloud, for example, get alerts on the things that was blocked or was allowed if a certain rule was created in that Azure firewall. With Defender for Cloud, you can use multiple scenarios for that, in my opinion.
Okay, so to kind of summarize again what you're saying, maybe, for example, there's someone listening that's like, hey, I kind of want to implement that workflow. If I, as a developer, would do that just to check if that's correct. So we have like an Azure pipeline or maybe some GitHub Actions or anyway, something like this. And we make changes in our code. We might create a pull request or in some way the code base gets updated.
Yeah.
And part of your pipelines, part of the flow, there's an approval stage.
Yeah.
So when you want to deploy it, for example, to the test stage, Azure DevOps can get an environment can get connected to an approval flow, and that can have a user or a group connected to it. This group or user can then automatically get notified, hey, you need to give approval on these changes. And then it can continue being deployed to an environment.
That's the case. And then
if
the approval is done, then the DevOps pipeline is running in a production environment, and then a specific port is open and the application can be used, or that specific part of the application can be used.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. It also just makes sure that, in case of a bigger company as well, the necessary people aren't, need to give approval, are aware of the changes being made.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So let's continue.
Yeah. On before recording, we talked also on the networking, firewalling, but also on backups.
All right.
That was the funny thing. You said backups. You do not need to mention that because within the infra site we don't need that. So I think maybe it's not we don't need that, but we are using infra as code, so we can enroll it again if it's disappearing somewhere. So the infra, besides the application thing, the app that you have built, the infra as code stuff within DevOps or GitHub or whatever, that needs a backup. But not only the specific resources, we don't need to do that. I totally agree with you on that.
Yeah.
So just
to interrupt for just a quick second, for future job opportunities, I do find backups very important.
And don't forget to back up your DevOps environment as well, because don't rely on GitHub only.
And I think it was this week that we learned that we need to store our BitLocker keys locally. So.
Okay, great.
That was the thing that we should mention in this podcast recording.
Yeah, something about that, yeah. So what is great, Frans, because I think what Frans is pointing out is really amazing, and that's the whole reason why we started this series, and I think this is a perfect example. It's that when we are talking DevOps and DevSecOps, we are not only talking about our application, right? This is a pretty awesome example of an infrastructure element like the Azure Firewall, but we are treating it as an application change model. So we are shifting towards left to get like what developers normally do to really get visibility, to get in control. And unfortunately, I think it's not only Azure or Microsoft, but with all the new cloud solutions and all the new SaaS solutions, what's always really missing is a really good change management control, right?
Right, right, right.
The fact that if you have certain permission in Azure Resource Group or subscription, it immediately gives you, if you are a contributor, you are a contributor. You can delete things, remove things, add new stuff. Yeah. And we will always figure that out through monitoring afterwards.
Right.
And what Franz is pointing out, like getting in control at the beginning before it's shipping towards, even on your infrastructure side. But I think what a good question what Franz was asking, and I think it has a really huge impact when it comes to infrastructure, definitely, but also on the monitoring side of the solution, because it impacts, it increases the complexity of the whole solution. When it comes, as a developer, when you are building your application, how do you integrate it to other solutions, if it is internal or external? And are you guys already thinking about like shifting a lot more towards API and other sides of communication? Because at the end, it's about communication, and legacy communication technologies require networks and network integration.
That's a good point. That's a good point. So like when I, for example, so what you mean is like, how do you integrate with external platforms like SAP, like, I don't know, some payment provider, stuff like that.
A database which is running internal, and an Oracle database which is running there for ages. But your solution is running on Azure. How do you communicate with that? And how can we increase that or improve that process, in your opinion?
Right, right, right. Yeah, the networking side is kind of my weaker side of Azure knowledge. I just get headaches every time I think about it. So I think what we do think we do use like a hub spoke model. We do use like expressed routes and VPN gateways, if I remember that term correctly. Good. Okay, it's good. I'm still worth something. No. Those things we do use, like where they are routed through they should be routed through a secure network, through a firewall, something like that. And then, of course, we're like, you know, you need to start thinking about using managed identities for Azure connections and all that kind of stuff.
And what is, in your opinion, the next step? And or definitely when it comes to infrastructure side, how can we drop that? Because definitely if you go towards the cloud security and the whole zero trust is playing a big role. And zero trust, it doesn't say you shouldn't have any network connectivity, but having like connectivity all over the place makes things much more complexer.
So can you explain that a little bit differently? Because for example, I need to have a payment provider in my Amazon web store. So what do you mean like getting rid? I don't really understand your question or like the next step in that.
So for communicating to an internal environment, right? So we have an Oracle database running somewhere.
Yeah.
Are there solutions how we can communicate to that environment without using the traditional protocols which enforce us
That's a great question.
Use networking technologies, for example, to have that express routes, VPNs, etc.?
Share an example on that.
Yes, please.
Because one of the larger environments that I have worked for in the past few months, I guess, the different systems to help also customers, but also internal people to book several stuff. And when the system for the booking was used by someone, there was no backend because the front end was only using APIs to getting information out of these different systems to publish that, to make a customer use that. And after that, when they are agreed or have paid several stuff, then it was delivered back with an API back to the other system, so it can be used by another application as well. So it was only used, the front end was only used by an API managed system. And
It was like an API in between them, right? So there was like the front end and BFF, a backend for front end, and that communicated with all of the different APIs. Is that what you meant?
Yeah, okay. Probably.
Like an API gateway, a reverse proxy kind of thing.
I don't know exactly because I'm not a developer in that kind of stuff.
Yeah, this is my domain.
We only use in that environment, and I know that because Defender for API played a big role in that area. Okay. Every API must be monitored, and that was done with Defender for API in that case. But every system, somewhere has a local database because it couldn't, it needs to be stored some data, but when it's communicating with another system, it was built, there was an API built, so every system can communicate. And if that's done with an API gateway or a system in between, I don't know exactly.
But yeah, okay.
That's probably the case, yeah.
So maybe for me to summarize, like Puyan's point was like, how does my application get access to data without communicating with that data store? Is that kind of what you meant? It sounds like a really difficult problem to fix.
Yeah,
it sounds like
a legacy way.
Like for example, like SOAP or really old protocols and that kind of stuff.
Or traditional SQL, traditional,
So I'm guessing, just from a developer's perspective that has just been thinking about this for 5 seconds, what you sometimes do, what you often see, is when you do talk to an external service, you put your own service communicator layer in between. Mm-hmm. So for example, let's say we have to talk to some SQL or whatever that is using really ancient protocols. You don't want to have that all around your enterprise applications. You don't want to have that spread around everywhere. So usually what you do is you build like one API gateway in between, which is just, you know, instead of getting all the users, it's just a call there. And that gateway translates that to that old protocol. And only that service is allowed to talk to the database to prevent other people from like going around it. At least that makes it a little bit more secure that there's only one allowed communication source. And that gateway can be completely secured, but I'm not really sure if that's where
that would be a really great future. And I think it's a little bit out of the topic. Maybe we should have a separate and dedicated episode.
Here we go again.
This is really to be honest, the reason why, because I was triggered by the fact that when Franz started about the monitoring, he mentioned the fact how the complexity it is. Like that integration makes your infrastructure so much often so much more complexer, because when it comes to Azure, you suddenly start using private networking, private endpoints, and all kind of routing technologies to send traffic over certain VPNs, etc. And to bring it back to our episode of today, that makes monitoring much, much harder.
It does.
Definitely, when it comes on your networking side, when certain application is not able to pull certain data, that kind of behavior finding really hard.
That is, 100%. Like building the applications is fine by me. Finding the Azure services I want to use to host and store and to do stuff with is fine. And at some point, like setting up that HubSpoke for me is like magic. And like when I need to open that port or one hub needs to talk to a spoke or whatever, I find that so difficult to debug. And I know there's tools and it is just so extremely difficult.
Because networking is also different.
It's completely different in cloud.
It's completely different in comparison. I mean, it is the same technology, but it's completely different when it comes. And when it comes to monitoring, if we go back, when it comes to our application, we discuss a lot about the infrastructure side of it. But what I'm always also interesting about is from a developer's perspective, You guys, of course, focus a lot on the application side of the logging, but a lot of time the infrastructure can impact your application as well.
Right.
How do you take that in considering when it comes to monitoring? Do you and what do you implement and what is important for you to know?
Right. So nowadays, what you see happening is that at least loads of applications are running in a Docker container, which is already a lot more secure than having access to the entire system. But I don't know if this is really where you want to go. At least if you want to build applications nowadays in this microservice landscape that we've gotten ourselves into, being resilient is very important. So being able to, for example, talk to your Azure SQL database that might be under heavy load and being able to be resilient and try connections again. But I think where you're going with this is also kind of how do you monitor security in those kind of in those kind of scenarios, and how do I as a developer make that easier to do?
Yeah, what the metrics are for you to define from your experience and expertise, what is security?
Right. Yeah, I think it's definitely like it is not only important to like log failed requests, like, hey, I don't know, something was unreachable, it's an error, but it's also logging things like, hey, this user this normal user just tried to delete some resource that only admins are allowed to do. It doesn't mean that someone needs to be woken up about it, but it does mean that you want to be able to log this and be able to see the actions performed by users. For example, when I create applications, I usually have some sort of layer between them, and that is like the action layer, the commands that are sent into the system. So data retrieval is usually fine, but when someone is trying to modify data, I always log the user ID and the action that they're performing. Therefore, like whenever we go back and look into our logging, we can always see exactly what every user attempted to change into our system, which does make the security aspect a bit easier.
And is that behavior also, so that's more application side of it? Is that also visible on the infrastructure side, for example? So we call, for example, a SQL injection or having like all kind of regexes or escape characters sending to your API.
That's a good point. No, I don't monitor that by default. I might have heard about something like one of those vendor for API products having something built into that for you. It would be really useful. It's just I've never built that because usually we build kind of internal facing applications and that's not the biggest problem. But also it's a really complex problem to start tackling yourself. So if something like Defender for API is able to help me with something like that, that would be really, really useful.
Yeah, we will definitely, I think we mentioned it a lot, and we will definitely have an episode about Defender for APIs. You mentioned that. A shout out to Ajinka, because we had Ajinka on one of our episodes in Defender for Cloud. We will definitely include the link to that episode as well in the description. So definitely watch that episode. It's great to see and hear his vision about modern security when it comes to APIs.
Just for the people who don't know who that is, who is that person?
Ajinka is the PM for Defender for API.
Gotcha. Okay.
From Microsoft's side.
Yeah.
So let's agree on that we extend this series with some extra nice things that we will do after closing these topics that we have done in the DevSecOps series. All the topics like the deployment, like the monitoring phase, every phase we have covered in an episode. Only the monitoring covers already two episodes. That will be three because we will do a next one after this one on identity. And after the identity stuff, we will start with some experts from the field, so to say, that are building stuff, that are using stuff to hear what the experience is. So let's agree on that, that we are...
That's good.
Planning that for the after summer stuff on the DevSecOps series.
After our well-deserved holiday. Exactly.
Yeah. I think we're running a bit out of time already. one of the things that I want to mention, we are mentioning Defender for Cloud multiple times in this episode.
Definitely.
And Defender for Cloud is a broader ecosystem of defenders on the Azure platform or multi-cloud platform, because Defender for Cloud is not only for Azure, but we can also use it on GCP, on AWS, and so on. Defender for API is part of it, Defender for Storage, Defender for Key Vault, and so on, and so on. Please also look into the series that we are having on Defender for Cloud, where we explain
Defender for everything, right?
Yeah. Yeah, then you need to talk to Sana, but because Sana Dianatomadan, one of the MVPs that was in the MVP Insights series that we are also hosting, was talking about Defender for Everything. But I think it's good, Defender for Cloud. Do we need to mention a specific part of that already, even for this episode, Puyan, for example?
No, I think we mentioned most of it, and I think Defender for Cloud is part of the solution. Sentinel is part of the solution, and other products and technologies definitely focus on Microsoft. It's part of it to create that monitoring platform.
Any other thing, Sander, that you want to know from an infra site? Infra perspective on DevSecOps?
Not in this current episode. I would just say, because I've just heard some really interesting things and ideas about from Puyan, for example, about like alerting on unusual activity, but also Defender for API containing features for like security monitoring that would be really difficult to build yourself. So I am definitely going to have to look way more into that. And if another developer is listening to this, I would also recommend that you do the same, because that sounds like something that you could get a quick win and a lot of security vulnerabilities, things that you would otherwise spend so much time building yourself. So I'm going to definitely look into that.
Nice. Then we will close this episode for now and continue with the next one on identity monitoring, and then specific related to DevSecOps, not only the identity part that I usually do.
It's going to be your episode.
Yeah, probably, but it will be a bit different because of the DevSecOps point of view on identity, and I think that's good. That's the wrap-up for today's episode of the Talking Security Podcast. I, and also we, hope you found our discussion on monitoring infrastructure within the DevSecOps framework insightful and valuable. If so, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share it in your network. Thanks to my co-hosts, Puyan and Sander, for sharing their expertise and perspectives. Thanks for hosting this together. This was almost the final episode, as we already explained that, in the DevSecOps series. Next time, we will be the last recording within the topics of DevSecOps. And after that, we will record... we will continue to record the DevSecOps series with some experts from the field. We will invite them to share their knowledge and experience on the products that they are building or they're using. So stay tuned for more episodes in our DevSecOps series. We'll continue to explore the intersection of development, security, and operations with the different experts. Until next time, stay secure and keep innovating.